Okay, here we go. Tonight's shir should be v'schus refuah shleima for Baruch ben Zelda Esther b'soch Ashar Chol Yisrael. What we're going to do tonight is a little bit different than what we've done, I would say, for sure, this series, and really everything we've been doing since we started Halakos Neiros, because for the most part, we've been talking strictly halacha, with the exception of the very first Hilchos Shabbos shir we gave. It wasn't really a halacha shir, but rather it was like an introduction to the limud of Shabbos, and we spoke about how special Shabbos is. Today what I want to do is step back a little bit and talk about Purim. I got a couple different requests from different people. I'm not sure if I see any of those people actually on the Zoom call as of yet. Hopefully they'll show up soon. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the themes of Purim, some ideas to maybe take with us so we can enter Purim and really get the most out of our Yom Tov. I was just listening to a podcast that my Rebbe, Rav Yaakov Neuberger, was on. And the person who was interviewing him was talking about the community and the shul that he's kind of cultivated and fostered in the growth-oriented type of community that he has. And he was talking about how they invest so much into the Yom Tovim. So I felt like we really do a lot of that in our learning. We prepare for the Yom Tovim. Mirtz Hashem, in the future, we'll start learning for Pesach. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Purim. I know this year was supposed to be about Hilchos Mikra Megillah. Maybe I'll just mention a couple different halachos pertaining to Mikra Megillah, things that we're probably familiar with for the most part, but it's important to mention them at the outset, and then we'll transition a little bit to the Machshava. So if you're only here for halacha and you only want to stay for the first little bit, I won't be offended, but I think some of the ideas we'll share will be pretty good, and hopefully they'll enhance your Yom Tov of Purim. So just to begin with, we have a mitzvah to listen to Megillah, to hear Megillah, twice, once at night and once during the day. There is a little bit of a discussion. Someone who can only hear it once, though, for whatever reason, whatever is going on, and they only have one opportunity, it could either be night or day. So it's better to hear the Megillah read during the day, because that's considered the Ikar Kriya. That's the primary, that's the main reading of the Megillah, and that's really reflected in the brachos we make on the Megillah. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that we make three brachos on the Megillah at night. We say an Al Mikra Megillah, we say Al Hanisim, and of course we say a V'Shachianu at night. And then, the Shulchan Aruch says, we only make two brachos during the day, the first two, Al Mikra Megillah, and She'asa Nisim La'Avosenu. But the Ramah comments, no, we say all three during the day as well, right? We add She'achiyanu during the day. And the Magen Avraham comments that we say She'achiyanu during the day because it's the Ikar Kriya. Now, there's an interesting discussion, right? If someone only has the opportunity, again, for whatever reason, to hear Megillah once, he was asked, should you hear it first, you know, at night, the first opportunity you have, or should you hear it the next day, when we say the day is the Ikar Kriya? So Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita was asked this question. And before he responded, someone said, is it like that classic case of the Radvaz? The Radvaz had it's a relatively well-known question, but someone was, Rachmana Letzon, they were in jail, and they were given a get-out-of-jail-free card, but they were given one day to go out and daven. And they wrote to the Radvaz, is it better to take that day and hold on to it till either Yom Kippur or Purim, 2 days of immense tefillah and tshuva, or should they take the next day? Should they just get out right away? And the Radvaz answers, based on the Gemara and Yuma, that ein mavir an al hamitzos, right? We don't pass over a mitzvah opportunity. You have the chance to get out tomorrow, and who even says the warden is going to, you know, be in good spirits come Yom Kippur time or come Purim time? Therefore, you should go out, get out of jail right away, daven betzibor, the first opportunity you have. However, and then presumably, if you apply that to Purim, so you'd say, well, maybe you should hear Megillah at night. However, Rav Shmuel didn't like this, and he says the cases are different. Because in one instance, you have two options, right? You have performing a mitzvah on a lower level, we'll call it, or a regular mitzvah, versus like a mitzvah with all the hidurim in the most special way, in the most special circumstances. And in that situation, you do the one that's available first, right? Davening on a regular day versus davening on Yom Kippur. So davening on a regular day is a very special mitzvah. It's a special mitzvah. But davening on Yom Kippur, you know, you would say it doesn't compare. But fundamentally, they're both the mitzvah of tefillah. Says Rav Shmuel, the case of Mikra Megillah is a little bit different because really it's two parts to one mitzvah, right? The reading at night and the reading during the day is really two sides of the same coin. And the daytime is the Ikar Kriya. So by doing it only at night, you'd end up having like a half a mitzvah that you didn't even get the significant part, you didn't get the ikar part of the kriya, and therefore he says you should read during the day. Again, we're mentioning this just to highlight that the ikar kriya is during the day, so to make sure that we're there. Of course, we know We're supposed to be concentrating the entire time, right? To make sure, first of all, the one who reads the Megillah has to have kavana to be motzi everybody else. And we have to have kavana, as we're the listeners, that we are going to be yotze with his kriya. And we have to have, we as the listeners, again, we have to have kavana the entire time. And halacha is that if we turn our attention at all during the leaning, so then you're not yotze chovas mikra Megillah, we miss out on the mitzvah of mikra Megillah. So then the question's like this. And this, I feel like this is like a good Jewish anxiety, Jewish guilt, right? When you're reading along and you space out for a half a second, but you're still following along, right? But you know, your mind was kind of elsewhere. It's almost like in Shimon Esrei, Lahavdil, right? And you bow down for Modim, and you think for a second, like, how did I get there, right? Or you're clapping your chest, and you don't even remember getting to Slach Lanu. So you're following along, you're in Perek Dalet, in the middle of the Megillah, but you don't recall getting there at all, right? So what's considered having Kavana? So Rishmuel Paskins, and he quotes Poskim, to back his sheet up, but he basically says, Kavana means that if someone were to ask you the next word, you'd be able to respond correctly. Since Mikra Megillah is long and it's difficult to just listen, so many poskim advise bringing your own Chumash, your Megillah, so you can follow along and really ideally read along with the Kriya. If you think you actually missed a word or you spaced out whatever it was, so then you can read immediately from the place from which you think you zoned out and read from there until you catch up with the Baal Kore. So that's a little bit in terms of Mikra Megillah. We know that there is a long-standing minhag to clap and to bang and to make noise during or anytime we hear the name Haman. And the Rama quotes that there's a minhag in Siman Tuf Reish Tzadi Se'if Yud Zayin. He quotes that there's a minhag to make noise and bang whenever we hear Haman's name. Kedeshi Yimcha Shemo Al Derech Machot Timchez Zecher Amalek. Right? And also the Pasuk in, I think it's in Mishlei Kohelas, I forget which one. Vishem Rasham Yirkov. That the name of Rasham should rot, it should decay. We want to blot out Haman's name. Now, depending on where you hear Mikra Megillah, so they're different minhagim. Sometimes there's banging, there's clapping, there's hitting every time Haman's name is mentioned. And there are shitos out there that say as long as you bang once, you know that is sufficient. So and that's quoted as well, to just bang once the first time Haman's name is mentioned, and that is sufficient. Again, that's still maintaining, upholding the minhag to bang during or upon hearing Haman's name. There is a discussion about going to a shul. Mikra Megillah, we would want to be Mekayim Mitzvah B'Rov Am Hadras Melech, going to a large shul. If you drive down Tui, or you know, depending on where you go to Or Torah or Chove, whatever it is in Skokie, if you're in Lincolnwood, right? There Baruch Hashem, there are many shuls in our community, and you can maybe it makes sense to pick the biggest shul so you can be Mekayim the Mitzvah B'Rov Am Hadras Melech. So Post can point out that might be a beautiful thing, but you can go to a shul that's smaller. Again, as long as there is minyan there, that is sufficient. Fine, that's a little bit of Mikra Megillah. Let's jump into the Machshava a little bit for the day. One, we'll see how much time we have, but I want to share at least a couple thoughts. The first thought is like this. Let's take a step back. We know Haman is incredibly happy when the poor, right, when the lottery that he conducts falls out on Adar. He gets all excited. He's elated, actually, the Gemara says. Why? Because it fell out on Adar. And of course, Adar is the month of Moshe's Petira. It's the month that Moshe Rabbeinu died. And if it's the month that Moshe Rabbeinu died, so then presumably, it's an ominous time for the Jewish people. That's what Haman thought. The Gemara then comments, though, that Haman was misinformed. No, it's not an ominous time for the Jewish people. Rather, it's a rather fortuitous time for the Jewish people. Why? Because it was the month that who was born? It was the month that Moshe Rabbeinu was born. So don't think that it was the month that he died. It was dafka the month that he was born, and therefore it's a good time for the Jewish people. Okay, fine. End of the Gemara. So it seems like already Moshe Rabbeinu is very much connected to the Purim story, but we don't see it. It's not so clear just yet. There's another Gemara, the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara that we just quoted is Gemara in Maseches Megillah. There's another Gemara in Maseches Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin is discussing the Megillah characters. So the Gemara tells us, or the Gemara asks a question, I should say. The Gemara wants to know, where do we know an allusion to Haman, Esther, and Mordechai? Where allusions to Haman, Esther, and Mordechai found in the Torah? Where do we have a remez to their name? Right? So Mar Doror is Mordechai, Esther. What's the Lashon? And he asked Tyr, I forget the exact lashon of the pasuk. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concealing himself, it's slipping my mind right now. But what's interesting, though, is the Gemara there says, where is there an allusion to Moshe Rabbeinu? in the Torah, which is bizarre, because Moshe Rabbeinu from Parsha Shemos until the very end of the Parsha, with the exception of one Parsha, is all over the Torah. So what exactly is going on? What's the Gemara saying? So the Maharsha and others point out that the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is being grouped with Haman, Esther, and Mordechai shows that Moshe Rabbeinu must be very much connected to the Purim story. The question is how and in what way? How do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu is connected to the Purim story? So the answer is as follows. What we have to do is actually look at one of the other drushes the Gemara makes over there. The Gemara over there says, well, let's take a look at Haman. Haman min ha-Torah minayin. How do we know? Where do we have an allusion to Haman in the Torah? So if I asked you, what word in the Torah sounds most like Haman, what would you say? So everybody's on Zoom right now and everybody's muted. You could unmute yourself, but I would imagine most people would say, oh, Haman, meaning the heavenly manna, right? The bread that fell from heaven. That sounds very much like Haman. But in fact, that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Parshas Bereishis, Hamin ha'itz, which means what? It's referring to Adam Arishon in Gan Eden. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, you can have whatever you want, you can eat whatever you want, all the fruit you can possibly have, except for this one tree, don't eat from that tree. That's how we know that's an allusion to Haman in the Torah. Why is that the allusion to Haman in the Torah? What does it have to do with Haman? So the Sfarim explained the following. Adam Harishon, basking in the glory, in the goodness of Gan Eden, he had every single thing he possibly could have wanted. There was one thing that he couldn't have, and that one thing was fruit from the Eitz Hadas. Haman HaRasha was very similar. Chazal teach us that Haman was getting a promotion, and he was so happy. It was the greatest, you know, kavod he ever received. But he wanted more kavod, and he wanted more kavod, and he was never satisfied. Not with money, and not with the promotion. And he famously remarks, V'kol zeh einanu shoveli, all this is totally not worth it to me. Meaning he accomplished so much. He attained so much, he amassed so much, but there was one Jew not bowing down to him. This one Jew undermined, in Haman's mind, everything that he had accomplished up until this point, and if this one Jew does not bow down to me, then Haman says it's all bogus, it's nothing. Haman represents an ideology of always wanting more. He was never ever satisfied. He never ever was happy with what he had, he always wanted more, and that's reflected again in Hamin Ha'itz. Adam Rishon had everything except for one thing. Now, again, like we mentioned, the Gemara could have made a much more intuitive drasha, right? It could have said the man, right? It's more, you know, phonetically, it's much closer to Haman's name than Hamin. So what's going on? So the Sfarim explained that in reality, there was no way that the Gemara could have used the man as a drasha to represent Haman, because the man represented everything that was opposite Haman. The man represented having enough, being satisfied, recognizing everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and whatever you have is good. It's great. It's all you need. Right? The Gemara tells us that the Jewish people had three parnasim in the Midbar. We had three people who sustained us, who took care of us in the Midbar. Right? We know that Aaron HaKohen, in his zchus, we were zocha to the Anani HaKavod. Bizchus Miriam, we had the be'er, we had the water, we had the well. And bizchus Moshe Rabbeinu, we got the man. And the Torah tells us when it came to the man, that whatever, this is Shmos Perek Tes Zayin, but Hashem's going to bring down the man, and it's going to be for everybody, and everything they need is going to come down. And everyone was told, take according to whatever you're eating, whatever you're able to consume over the course of the day, that's what you should take. And the Torah tells us that people did that, and other people took less, and other people took more. But the Torah also tells us that whoever gathered tons, so that was sufficient and there were no leftovers. Whoever gathered a little bit, it ended up being enough. Right? Whatever amount of man people took, that provided the proper amount that each family needed. In other words, the man was all about what? Exactly what you need. Nothing less and nothing more. Moshe Rabbeinu had this midah of histapkus. Histapkus means to be satisfied with whatever one has. Moshe Rabbeinu, it was in his merit that we got the man. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't need immense physical, material wealth or indulgences. He didn't care about that. Right? The Ibn Ezra tells us, at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, I think it is, says that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, he didn't eat, he didn't drink, he didn't sleep, he didn't do anything. The Ibn Ezra says that was the only person who ever in history could have done that. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't care for Gashmis. He wasn't interested in material wealth at all. Whatever he had, whatever little bit, he was fine with. He wasn't interested. However, Moshe Rabbeinu was the exact opposite when it came to spiritual pursuits. Right? The pasuk in Mishlei tells us that Ohev Kesef, Lo Yisba Kesef. Someone who loves money is never, ever, ever satisfied with money. They always want more. Now, very interestingly, the Gemara says that pasuk is actually referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's saying whoever loves money wants more money. How can it possibly be referring to Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Gemara understands that when Shlomo Melech was talking about Kesef, right, there's a deep contrast between the way people run after money and the way certain people run after spiritual pursuits. We know the pasuk in Mishlei in the second parak, Im Tivakshenaka Kesef, right? If you search for it like money, or if you chase, I should say like this, if you chase after it like money and you search for it like hidden objects, then you will find Yiras Hashem, right? Shlomo Melech talks like that a lot. The Gemara understood that the way people chase after money, people are willing to wake up early and go to sleep late. People are willing to relocate. People are willing to do crazy things to make a buck. Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to do crazy things for Ruchnius, for another mitzvah. You know Moshe Rabbeinu was about to go. He's going to spend the rest of eternity with the Kadosh Baruch Hu in Shemayim. And yet he said, no, Hashem, I want to go into Eretz Yisrael. I want to separate Trumos and Maestros. I want to step in the. I want to walk the land of Israel. He set up the cities of refuge, the Arei Miklat, before the ones that were set up in Israel, before the ones that ended up being set up in Israel would make the ones he set up outside of Eretz Yisrael effective. He was going to do anything he possibly could do. Anything he could do to do another mitzvah. Moshe Rabbeinu represented someone who couldn't really care less about material gains. He was happy with what he had. But when it came to Ruchnius, Moshe Rabbeinu always, always, always wanted more. And I think that's the deepest connection between Moshe Rabbeinu and Purim. Again, we started with what? Haman had this lottery. The lottery fell in Adar. He was happy because it was the month of Moshe Rabbeinu's death. And it turns out it's the month of Moshe Rabbeinu's birth. And not only that, the Gemara in Chulin says, when asking how do we know Haman, how do we know Esther, how do we know Mordechai in the Torah, we also are asked, how do we know Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah? Where's a remez, where's an allusion to Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is very much connected to the Purim story, but I'll take it one more step. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, 88a, a well-known Gemara, tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifted up a mountain over the Jewish people's head. And Hashem said to us, accept the Torah, and if not, I'm going to bury you. Kaf Aleim Har Kigigis. Right, we're standing tachtis sahar, he lifts up the barrel over our heads, and he says, if you take it, great, and if not, you're going to be buried right here. So okay, we accepted the Torah. But Rav Acha bar Yaakov in that Gemara says, that doesn't make any sense. Mudar rabba le'oraisa. The Jewish people have a claim, right? Imagine you get to Shemayim after 120, and you didn't keep any mitzvos. So Hashem says, you didn't keep my mitzvos, so we have a taina. We say, Hashem, listen, like, we didn't want it. You know, you put a gun to our head and said, accept the Torah or I'll kill you. So we said, okay, I'll accept the Torah, but I didn't really want it. You can't get mad at me. You can't get mad at me for not wanting to keep all the mitzvos. So the Gemara says, while that was true, many years later, after Maimed Har Sinai, in the Purim story, Kimu v'kiblu, the Jewish people were Kimu mashi kiblu kvar, we recommitted ourselves to the Torah. The question, though, is, and that's the Gemara. The question that Gemara is when, where, how is it clear that the Jewish people re-accepted the Torah? If you read through the Megillah, is there any indication that the Jewish people accepted the Torah? Shkoyach, it says, Kimu v'kiblu, ha-Yehudim. But what does that mean? So the Maharal in his Gor Aryeh, he points this out in other places as well, explains that we accepted upon ourselves the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. We said, we'll take upon Purim and the mitzvot derabanan, specifically Mikra Megillah. Says the Maharal, based on that, the Jewish people reaffirmed our commitment to the rest of the Torah, because we wouldn't have added another mitzvah midrabanan if we hadn't accepted all other previous mitzvos. Says the Maharal, is how we accepted the Torah. Now, what's important for us is that we have to recognize that the holidays, the Yom Tovim that we celebrate, Bizman Hazeh, aren't simply thinking about what happened years prior to the Jewish people. We're re-experiencing, we're reliving them right now, and this is reflected in the brach, She'asa Nisim Lavosinu, Bayamim Ahim Bazman Hazeh. It wasn't just back then, but it's right now. And Purim is a day when the Jews wanted more on a ruchni level, we re-accepted the Torah, and therefore Purim is a time for us to do the same. And I would suggest the following. Of course we're not creating new mitzvos midrabanan. We're not creating new isurim, new mitzvos, anything like that. But I think what we can do all on Purim is stop for 30 seconds and think at one point during the day, where can I be a little bit better? Where is one mitzvah that I can do just a little bit better? And by doing that, we're telling Hashem that we are recommitting ourselves. We're thinking about our Avodas Hashem in a real way, and we're saying, how can I improve a little bit? When we do that, that is signaling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we re-accept the Torah. And I want to re-emphasize again, it should be a small thing. I tell my students this all the time. One of my favorite Divrei Torah, the Mishnah Avos tells us that this world is Doma L'Prozdor. This world is like an antechamber. I don't even know what an antechamber is. I feel like that's like an art scroll word, right? But this world's like a lobby, and Olam Haba, that's the main ballroom. That's the social hall, that's where the wedding is. Now, the Yetzer Hara, I believe, gets us to go all crazy. Because he gets us thinking, in order to get to the ballroom, I need to change my whole entire life. Right? We need to stop going by Michael and start going by Michal Pinchas, and we need to change the way we dress and the way we speak and the way we act and everything like that. We need to have a whole 180 degree change. And I think that's the furthest thing from the truth. And the answer is the following. What happens when you go to the lobby? What do you do in the lobby of a hotel when you get there for a wedding? Most people, I hope, right? I haven't seen anybody show up to the lobby with their suit on a hanger or a dress on a hanger and get dressed right there. Right? First of all, it's inappropriate and it's highly, you know, it's just bizarre. But it doesn't happen. We don't make those wholesale changes in the lobby. What do you do? I don't know if you're a guy and you're wearing a tie, maybe you tie your tie, maybe you button your top button. I don't know if a person wears a hat, maybe they put the brim down. Maybe a woman runs her fingers through her hair to make sure it looks nice, or puts on new lipstick, whatever. Small changes happen in the lobby. Pausing for 3 seconds before Shemona Esrei and thinking about a family member who needs help. Whether it's medically, whether it's financially, whether it's for a shidduch, whatever the case may be. Stopping and thinking for 3 seconds about Klal Yisrael and what the Jewish people need. And what the Jewish people are going through. Small, 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 small things can make the biggest differences in our Avodas Hashem. And I think that's something important to think about. When we show Hashem that we're willing to recommit to the Torah by doing something a little bit better, by upping our game in one area of Avodas Hashem just a little bit, that shows Hashem that we're recommitting ourselves to His Torah, and that's how I think we can be Mekabel the Torah anew every single Purim. So that's idea number one in terms of Moshe Rabbeinu's connection to Purim and a never-ending yearning and desire to keep on growing. Fine. Let's share another idea. I shared this one with my students. I happen to be very excited about this next idea, so I hope everyone enjoys this as well. The Megillah tells us many times that Esther Hamalka found Chin. The Megillah tells us right after Vashti is killed and they have this big party to find a new girl. So Esther, very quickly, Vati Esther noses Chin be'inei koro eha. Not just Hamelech Achashverosh, but everybody who saw her seemed to be taken by Esther. Again, this is still in the second parak. He loved her. Mikol hanashim. He loved her more than any other woman. Again, there's this notion of chin, and that phrase comes up a couple other times in the Megillah. Now, what's interesting is, if you think about it, there are a few other people in the Torah and Tanakh who find chin. Now, the phrase, umatza chin b'nei Hashem, b'nei Elokim, it comes up a lot, but I want to highlight three. Noach, right? Noach was an ish tzadik, kamim hayah b'dorosav, and he of course found chin in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Esther Hamalka found chin in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well, and we know Moshe Rabbeinu, post Chid HaEgel, found chin in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if I ask you, what is chin, what would everyone say? Because we've seen this in art show, and this is how we always translate it. Matza chen b'nei Hashem means what? Everyone's muted, but I'm sure everybody's screaming out on top of their lungs, just not realizing that they're muted, that he found favor in Hashem's eyes. Now, what in the world does favor mean? It's like, maybe it's like, it's better to translate it as chen. I don't know what favor means. That's a bizarre word. Feel free to unmute yourself. Anyone know what favor means? I'm not really sure. But this is what I want to suggest. If you think about those three characters, Noach, Esther, and Moshe Rabbeinu, they're very related. Very much related. What happened when Noach is matzah chin in Hashem's eyes? Noach found chin in Hashem's eyes right before the world was wiped out. The Mabul was coming, and Noach found favor in Hashem's eyes. Esther found favor. Imna matzasi chen bi'enecha ha-melech. Right? It's a well-known song. Imna matzasi chen bi'enecha ha-melech. And we know ha-melech, the Midrash tells us, ha-melech is always, if it's not ha-melech ha-chashviros, it's referring to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Jewish people are about to be wiped out, and she finds favor in Hashem, in Hashem's eyes. And Moshe Rabbeinu found favor in whose eyes? HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, right after the Chiyad Ega, when Hashem wanted to wipe out the Jewish people. Chin, this favor that we're discussing, has a very special component. And that is, it has the ability to overwhelm impending destruction. Hashem wanted to wipe out the world. He wanted to start fresh. Hashem wanted to wipe out the Jewish people. Haman, I should say, wanted to wipe out the Jewish people. And Hashem wanted to wipe out the Jewish people after Chiyad Ega. But there's a certain chen, there's a certain favor that people have that can cause you to kind of reevaluate, right? Maybe think about it as, I don't know who's on the call, but I'll speak to two people whose cameras are on right now. So I imagine, I know the Dordex, and I'm sure the Leftons have grandchildren. So I'm sure people have, again, we don't play favorites with our children, but there's always that one child has a certain way of speaking to mommy or to safta or to bubby, whoever it is. They can say it in a certain way. There's a certain chain they have, and you're so frustrated, you're going crazy, and the kids are all going nuts Shabbos afternoon, whatever it may be. But maybe a kid says something, they say your name in a certain way, whatever it is, and all of a sudden your heart melts a little bit, right? There's a certain chain there. Esther had this chain, but I want to take it a step further. Rav Kluger points out in this beautiful sefer here by Yosher HaMelech, it's a very special sefer on the Megillah, he says that Noach lacked something. Noach had a flaw, and that was he didn't daven for the world. He didn't daven for humanity. Rav Kluger points out that Esther was a tikkun for Noach. Why? Because she davened. She fasted, sumu alai, fast 3 days, tshuva, tefillah. And she davened for everyone else. And how do we know that it was the ultimate tikkun? Because the Medrash points out, and the Svarim point out, that the 50 Amos high gallows that Haman was hanged on came from what? Came from Noach's teva, the Medrash says. And not only that, Rav Kluger points out, based on the Arizal, that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Gilgul of Noach. Right? If we're familiar with Gilgulim, which I'm not, I want to point that out. But there are well-known Gilgulim in Jewish tradition. Right? Many people point out that Pinchas and Eliyahu, it's the same neshama, a Gilgul, a reincarnation. The neshama comes back. Again, I don't know what these things mean so much. Rabbi Schechter from Akor is way more familiar with this. But The Arizal points out that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Gilgul Neshama of Noach, because there was a tikkun that needed to be made. There was some rectification. He needed to fix something. Noach didn't daven for everybody. Moshe Rabbeinu pours his heart out for the Jewish people. Hashem, don't wipe out the Jewish people. And that was the ultimate tikkun, and that's why he found chen in a Kaddish Baruch Hu's eyes. And I point out, like I showed my class, the Pasuk in Mishlei, Paragimel Pasuk Dalet, it says, U'mitzachen bein Elokim, sorry, U'mitzachen v'seichel tov bein Elokim v'adam. So it's not, first of all, just point out grammatically, it's not matzachin, it's umatza, it's a shva under the mem. But okay, anyway, nonetheless, umatzachin, v'seichel tov bein elokim v'adam. So you should find chin. Again, what's chin? So the Gra, in his Perush on Mishlei, says the following. The Gra says that chin is related to the word chinam, which is free. Chinam is something free. How do we know it's free? The Gra says, because it's always im matzasi chin. If you find it, something you find on the street is a matzia, you found it, you don't have to pay for it. So I was thinking the following. Let's take a step back before I explain the last idea. When I was in YU, I davened at, I think it was the 7-10 minyan almost every single day. And most days there was a different Rav or Rebbe or Rosh Yeshiva who would give a short Dvar Halacha, 2 minutes maybe. Just a quick thought, something to think about during the day. And I remember Rabbi Danny Rapp, who I don't know if people are from Skokie here on the Zoom, but Rabbi Rapp used to be in Skokie, I think in the summers, visiting Rav in the summers. Anyway, Rabbi Rapp said the following idea. He gets up one morning and he says, I think it's probably a chiv d'oraisa to smile at people in the morning. Not just the morning, during the day. What's pshat? So he said he was reading a Time magazine article and they had a whole cover on suicide. And they were talking about how the number one place apparently to commit suicide in the world is at the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. And a person had jumped and they were in this person's apartment trying to like figure out what the impetus was, what motivated this person, etc. And they found a suicide note. And the person said, I'm on my way to the Golden Gate Bridge. And the person wrote, if anybody stops and says good morning or smiles at me and says hello, I will not jump. Which is a frightening idea. So Rabbi Rapp said, he thinks there's a chiv to smile at people and to say hello. And I told my class today, the Gra says that chen is milashon chinam. It costs absolutely nothing to smile at people. It costs absolutely nothing to be a little bit nicer to people. And again, like Rav Kluger points out, whether it was the Mabul, whether it was Haman, whether it was post Cheta Egel, there was destruction. And I think often people in life experience, maybe in waves, and maybe not to that degree, but different, let's say, turmoil on the inside. Something's eating them up, whether emotionally, whether, I don't know, financial, all sorts of struggles that people have, stresses, anxieties that people have, and they're destroying themselves on the inside. They're wrestling with something. To smile at a person, to say something positive, to say something encouraging and supportive, you have no idea what it can do to another person. And it costs absolutely nothing. And I think that's really the overarching message of everything on Purim. Like we spoke about the past 2 weeks with Mishloach Manos and Matanos Levyonim, it's all about what? It's all about being marbe the reyos, right? Strengthening the bonds and the connections between the Jewish people, giving to people, especially someone who maybe you're not so close with, or thinking about someone who might not be getting as many sets of Mishloach Manos, and giving to that person. Matanos Levyonim, making sure the people who are a little bit more vulnerable have what they need to have. A suda, even the drinking at a suda and the costumes, it's all related to this idea. To become a little bit less inhibited. To be a little bit less guarded. To be a little bit more vulnerable and open with people. We dress up in costumes, why? Because we're showing we recognize that the externals don't matter. The clothing that we wear that so often separates us from other people, or maybe a kippah, or what, all these silly superficialities, these externals, right? Like one of my good friends likes to say, labels are for clothing and not people. We have to stop putting people in boxes. We have to recognize that everything on Purim is all about a certain mitzias chen. And hopefully we'll be able to radiate, to ooze that chen, to smile at someone. To say, hello, shalom aleichem, how are you, Rabid? How are you? How are you doing? I haven't seen you in a little while. How are things? Right? Even something like that can lift up a person. Rav Soloveitchik writes about that. A person standing on the side of a room at a kiddush or something like that, some social function. Because they feel like a little bit disconnected. They don't know as many people. They feel a little bit out of it. Going over to that person, saying shalom aleichem, recognizing the person. Being mechaved a person. Kavod comes from the word kaved. It's heavy, meaning you have worth. You are of substance. Being mechaved another Jew is saying, I recognize you. I appreciate you. And I understand that you have something to offer. I think that is one of the most special things that we can do. And I think that's also one of the very, very important ideas when it comes to Purim. I'll share maybe one last idea in the time remaining. The Megillah tells us that, of course, as you mentioned, Mordechai did not bow down. Mordechai would not bow down, let's say. He would not bow down to Haman. Lo yichra ve lo yishtachaveh. Perek gimel pasuk beis in the Megillah. He will not bow down. Now, I don't know if you're a grammarian, but that's not how the Megillah should have written the pasuk. Yichra, yishtachaveh, those are both belashon atid, those are both future tense. It should have said lo kara, that he did not bow. Why is it that he will not bow? What's going on there? So, many Svarim point out that Mordechai had a certain self-confidence. And when we're talking about self-confidence, we have to understand what was going on in the world. Every single person, and not just non-Jew, every single Jew was bowing down to Haman. Every single person was looking at Haman saying, Haman, you are the man. And Mordechai said, no way, absolutely not. He had a certain confidence, he had a certain clarity, he understood what he was doing. And because he wasn't wishy-washy, because he had that certain clarity that often in life is so, so rare and hard to come by, so there was no doubt that he would maintain this outlook in the future. Sometimes you make a commitment. Oh yeah, I'll be there. But because we're not so committed, the commitment we made means really nothing until we actually show up and follow through. But since Mordechai spoke with such confidence, he understood where he was at and what he was going to do and what he represented and what were the values that he held true. So there was no reason, there was no way that Mordechai was going to bow down in the future. But the question is, how is it that Mordechai did that? Meaning, how did Mordechai maintain that hashkafa, put the blinders on, and not be concerned or worried? And I think the idea is that Mordechai understood his own personal mission in life. He understood what he was about. And I think that's so incredibly important. Mordechai is the same osios, it's the same letters as the word derachim, paths or ways. Mordechai had the ability to stay on his own path, and everyone around him, Jews and non-Jews, were partying and going crazy and having a good time and drinking and eating. It was bananas. It was Vegas in Shushan. And Mordechai didn't care. He wasn't worried. And when you have that ability to say, like, hey, I have an avoda in life, and I have my specific mission, what you do is your thing, and that's fine. Right? We're all sitting in our own little Zoom box. I'm in my Dalet Amos. We're all connected in a way, but we're all unique. We're all distinct. We all have a certain avoda in life. And that's something very, very important to think about. When I was younger, I tell this all the time. When I was younger, so when you would watch the Olympics, when I was watching track as a younger boy, so I always thought the guy on the outside had a head start. The guy on the outside track, it looked like he was, you know, 20, 30 feet from the guy on the inside track. And the guy from, I don't know, Brazil or Belarus or whatever it was, I said, it's not fair. That guy's obviously going to win the race. But what's the teretz? When I got a little bit older, I understood that every track is 100 meters. So often in life, we look to the right of us, we look to the left of us, we look at people in shul, in our community, down our block, whatever it is, and we think about the person. We say, oh, where is he holding? Where is she holding? How does he daven? How does she daven? Oh, I'm so much better than that person, or that person's so much firmer than I am, or they're such a nicer person. Whatever the case may be, we always judge ourselves relative to other people. Mordechai was able to stay in his lane, to run his race. We all have a race in life to run. We all have a mission. We all have a tafkid. Hashem gives us, each and every one of us, a mission to fulfill in this world. Mordechai understood that his mission was different than the person next to him and the person next to that person. Every single person has a different avoda. So Mordechai stopped looking at himself and comparing himself to other people and judging himself or acting based on other people. I'm not going to do what that person's doing because I'm totally different. I have a very specific mission in life. And because Mordechai had that clarity and mission, again, lo yichrav lo yishtachav, he wasn't going to change because what you do is great. But that's for you, not for me. He understood his own avoda in life. And I think Purim, again, is a time to recognize how we're all unique. We all have our own derech in life. And when you do that, lo yichrav lo yishtachav, you're not going to be swayed. You're not going to be concerned. You're not going to be moved by anybody else around you. So those are a couple ideas on Purim. Again, just to quickly review, we spoke a little bit in terms of the halachos of Mikra Megillah on Purim. We spoke about paying attention, hearing everything, hearing it during the day, especially we learned a little bit about the banging during a Haman. We spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu and his connection to Purim, to never ever be satisfied, to always grow in our ruchni, in our spiritual pursuits. We spoke about Noach and finding Chen, Noach, Esther, and Moshe Rabbeinu. Finding Chen, and that was a tikkun for Noach. And again, we all can find chen. It's chinam, it's absolutely free to smile, to be a little bit nicer, to encourage and motivate, to lift up other Jews around us. And of course, Mordechai, lo yichrav lo yishtachav, the confidence that he had in his own path in avodas Hashem. I wish you all a freilichen, freilichen Purim.
Thank you.
Everybody have a good one.
Chag Sameach.